Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. All right, good morning. It's Saturday, April 11th, 2009. This is Solder Smoke 105 from Rome, Italy. All right. You guys have heard about the earthquakes, and I guess that's kind of the Italy portion of this show. Very sad event. It's a real tragedy up in Abruzzo. Abruzzo is the province that lies just northeast of the Italian province of Lazio, and Lazio is where Rome is located. So the earthquake area is not at all far from here. I think it's something like 70 kilometers northwest here. It's so close that on a clear day you can see the snow-capped mountains of Abruzzo, and I think you can even see very close to the earthquake area from the hill right next to my house here, from the Janiculum Hill. If you go up there on a clear day and look off in that direction, you see snow-capped mountains, and I think you're actually looking. I checked it out one time on Google Earth, and it's a pretty clear shot up into that area. We've driven up there. We've been up in that area several times. My listeners will recall that we had I put some pictures up about Billy and Maria and Elisa and I going up to show the kids the snow, and that's very close to where the earthquake hit. It's just awful. I mean, the stories up there are really really terrible. But at the same time, I have to admit that there's kind of it's kind of scientifically interesting. I think that's true, and you know, people react to the earthquake differently. We can feel them here in Rome, which is, I mean, it shakes people up literally and emotionally here, and my wife finds it quite upsetting. But Billy and I seem to have a strange kind of almost kind of scientific interest in the whole thing. We as soon as we feel one, we go running to the computer and fire up the U.S. Geological Survey site and see how long it takes the earthquake to register on the site. And then we, you know, look at the where it fit in on the Richter scale. The initial shock that caused all the damage up there was, and I think it was last Sunday, a week ago tomorrow. It was 6.3. And it woke us up. It hit at 3:30 in the morning local time, and I'm telling you, the place was, even here in Rome, it was the apartment was rocking pretty good. There's the beds were shaking, and we had one door that was it was rattling as if it was being blown by a violent windstorm, and Elisa really kind of freaked out. Jumped out of bed. I'm a little bit slow to wake up at that point, so it took me a half a minute or so to get up to get awake and get oriented. And anyway, by that time the shaking was starting to stop. The kids slept right through it. The aftershocks are kind of almost as dramatic. There was one occurred during the workday at about 11:30 in the morning. And I was just sitting there in front of my computer at work, and all of a sudden the whole embassy just kind of rocked back and forth a couple times. I think that was the reverberations from a 4.3 shock up in the same area in Abruzzo. The USGS site really provides a lot of information about all kinds of the technical aspects of the seismic activity. For example, I learned that it takes about 15 seconds for the shockwave from the earthquake in Abruzzo to reach us here in Rome. One of the other big aftershocks that really got us was kind of early in the week. I was sitting in the living room describing to Elisa what the aftershock that I felt at work felt like. And I was saying, well, I sat in the chair, and then the chair just started kind of rocking back and forth. And then just as I finished telling the story, the exact same thing happened again. And we got a pretty serious a tremor, again, from Abruzzo hit. That one was about, I think that was like a 5.3 or 5.6. And that one had the apartment going pretty well, too. The windows were shaking. We have these kind of decorations hanging above the kitchen table, kind of these glass ornaments, and they now are our informal seismic detectors, because if they're moving, well, the earth is moving. So that's what the earthquakes were like here. No real damage in Rome. Rome is not in a seismic danger area. The red zones for earthquakes are up in the Apennine Mountains, along the central spine of Italy, especially in that Abruzzo area, in the area around the town of L'Aquila. It's been a real tragedy. They just had the funerals yesterday, and I'm happy to report that ham radio operators have been doing a really great job in helping out up there, and it's been recognized in the media here, and by ordinary Italians, people who know that I'm a ham, for example, where I work, will have come up to me and said, "Wow, we heard about what the amateur radio operators are doing up in Abruzzo. That's really great." And there was a big story on it on the national television here. So, three cheers for the Italian hams who've been helping out in the earthquake. And I hope. Just wish the best for the people up there. A lot of people up there now have lost everything and are living in tents, and it's cold in Abruzzo. So keep them in your thoughts. All right, that's kind of a sad Rome, Italy travelogue this week, but well, that's the way it is. Moving on to the radio, let's see, what can I tell you about this week? SBL1 Blues. Jim AL7RV sent me a care package so I could build the W3. So I could build the W3PM, very simple whisper rig, because I've been wanting to get into this kind of new mode of a beacon transmission. I want to have all the fun. I want to be able to come into my shack and see one of those whisper maps showing lines reaching out to Fiji and New Zealand and South Africa and places like that. W3PM, Gene had this really great circuit for a very simple whisper transceiver, and Jim heard me talking about it and sent me this really great care package. And included in the care package was one of these kind of little packaged IC-type double-balanced mixers, DBMs. This is the SBL1, SBL2, SBL3 series. There's a whole bunch of these kind of things. They come with little kind of 8-pin tin cans. And inside, they have essentially a diode ring double-balanced modulator with the coils and the diodes. I really like these things because they're the kind of IC, the kind of, well, they're not really an integrated circuit, but they look like an integrated circuit, but they're the kind of little chip package that I don't feel bad about using, because if you crack them open, you can see inside exactly what's in there. You can look at it and see the four little diodes and the two trifolar toroidal coils in there, just all very neatly soldered into the pins. And you know, we've all built the same circuit on our own. You can't say that about a Pentium 4, but you can about an SBL1. So anyway, I kind of like these chips. I've never used one before, but in my effort to get into whispering, I decided that what I was going to do is take W3PM's rig and make it very significantly simpler. First, and again, this is just the first stage, so I might make it more complicated and go up to Gene's full design later on. But in the beginning, I've decided to, one, dispense with the whole receive side. Because I admit it, I'm into transmitting. I don't even have a receive system for the visual QRSS transmitter that I'm running. It's just the transmitter, and I depend on other people's receivers, OPR, and the grabbers, especially ON5EX's excellent grabber up there in Belgium. And for Whisper, I'm willing to do the same thing. I'm going to build the transmitter first. Gene's transmitter is a single sideband transmitter, kind of unusual because it has the crystal filter operates at the operating frequency. You can't really do that in ordinary SSB rigs unless you want to limit yourself to one specific frequency. But that's the idea in QRSS and Whisper, so it's not a problem there. But I was thinking that, we really don't actually need the crystal filter because double sideband should work just fine. I've inserted the double balanced mixer, the SBL1, between the oscillator and the RF amplifier in my already built QRSS 30 meter beacon. So it's up there now. I had to put in another little amp stage because the SBL1 and pretty much all the diode ring mixers require about 7 dBm of power at the local oscillator port. You need to have enough power from the local oscillator to turn those diodes in the ring mixer on and off. And my little oscillator from the QRSS beacon wasn't quite there. So I built one stage of amplification. The whole thing is switchable, I'm happy to report. So if I want to go back to where I was before, I just throw a switch and the energy from the oscillator goes directly into the RF amplifier. As a matter of fact, I'm transmitting right now on 30 meters on the visual MEPT frequency. But I have a little switch and I have a little audio import there. And the idea is, I haven't done it yet, but if I want to go to Whisper, I throw the switch, I put the diode ring mixer into the circuit, and then I run the audio from line out of the computer up into the audio in port that I have and the audio in jack that I've placed on the cabinet of the beacon box. And then hopefully the audio being generated by the by K1JT's excellent program will modulate my QRSS transmitter. I'll have to adjust the frequency of the oscillator, of course, to get it into the Whisper band, which sits a bit above the visual MEPT band. But that's the plan. So it'll be real simple, double sideband whispering. And I think it'll work. Later on, I'll get around to building the crystal filter, put that in there. That should give me, a 3 dB gain over DSB. And then one of these days I'll build the receiver. But thanks a lot to Gene, W3PM, and to Jim, AL7RV, for their contributions to this project. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. One of the questions I have is whether there's enough audio out from the sound card in my computer to drive that SBL1 mixer directly, or whether I need to build the audio amplifiers that Gene has in his circuitry there. I don't think it takes too much juice to get the SBL1, to modulate the SBL1. As a matter of fact, that's why I started out by calling this SBL1 Blues. I like these little circuits, but watch out, guys. It's real easy to let the smoke out. Real easy to let the smoke out on the on these little mini circuits, SBL1 diode ring mixers, especially if you put too much input into the kind of the 0 to 200 megahertz port, where you can, you know, unbalance it, the little port that allows you to unbalance it either with DC or with audio or with another RF frequency. I checked one of the I was doing some Googling on this thing because one of my the original SBL1 that I put in there mysteriously stopped working after I did some tests. And I think what happened is, I'm almost sure that I put a little bit too much voltage on that audio import, and it burned out either the wires in the coil or the little diodes that are in there. So you got to be careful, because the SBL1 is actually, I think, it's easier to let the smoke out of an SBL1 than it is to let the smoke out of an NE602. And certainly easier than a homebrew diode ring mixer. The homebrew diode ring mixers that I've put together are pretty much battleship solid, with these big diodes in there and big coils with fairly large wires. If you open up the SBL1, it's quite dainty. It's tiny, but easy to let the smoke out. So be careful about that. Hey, another interesting development related to all this DSB whispering. It's the, by the way, I downloaded the Whisper software from K1JT, from John Taylor. You know about John. I've got info on him up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. He is the almost certainly the only Nobel Prize winner in the group. I think he won the Nobel Prize for Physics. I think it was 1993, and he's a wonderful member of the whole QRSS MEPT group, and has developed this really great software, including the Whisper software. And I was very pleased that I was able to successfully download it and get it running on my old clunky computer here. Tried to get a version to run on my old Windows 3.1 Toshiba laptop, but that was pushing the envelope a little bit. But I've got it running on this computer, and so that was a major step forward in my my progress towards Whisper. Here's the other thing I wanted to mention on this. Paolo, IK1ZYW, I think he's up in Torino, up in northern Italy. Paolo has been doing some really interesting work on using MP3 players to generate the to feed the Whisper audio tones into his QRSS MEPT, QRSS Whisper transmitter. Now, Mark K6HX from the Brainwagon blog was doing this a while back, and he was sending me emails about it. And at the time, I hadn't thought about Whisper too much, and I really didn't get what he was talking about. But now that I'm closer to doing Whisper myself, now I see it, and I see the beauty of it. The idea is that what you could do is just record the burst, the Whisper audio tones produced by the K1JT program, record them onto a little MP3 player, one of these little thumbnail-sized or thumb-sized MP3 players. Paolo describes his MP3 pencil, and then just plug that into the audio import of your Whisper transmitter and let the MP3 do its thing there. I was just thinking, I thought we might have had a little tremor there. We might have. I don't know. It was kind of a small one. that would really be good, because then you could use the you could even use the audio amplifiers in the MP3 that are intended to drive your earphones, and you might have enough power out to just drive it directly, and it would be a real simple way of getting that that Whisper transmitter going. Now, of course, one of the things you have to do with Whisper, you have to synchronize the transmissions, because the audio bursts are supposed to be taking place on the minute or every other minute, and it's all kind of time coordinated in a way that the visual MPTs are not. So that's something that has to be looked at. And Paolo says he's almost certain that he can do this. So really very interesting stuff, and I hope to be whispering soon. At the other end of the technology spectrum, I'd mentioned a project called, I guess we call it Clockwork Minimalist MEPT QRSS. The idea was, let's try to get the transistor count on the transmitter side down to one. And this would require a kind of some form of mechanical code generation, mechanical CW generation. Eldon out there in on the West Coast has done this with a water power generator, really quite interesting. And my idea was to use a little clock drive, just an ordinary little clock drive. And I've got it going, and it needs some bugs to be worked out, but it's real simple. It uses a kind of a very cheap little clock drive. And what happens is I use the second hand sweeps around, and there's a couple little wires that drag along the conducting surface, the little PC board, copper-clad board surface that I put below the clock drive. And there's kind of a little loop of wire, and they form two little brushes that are swept along with the second hand. And one of them is in constant contact with the PC board that forms the base, and the other makes contact with little isolation pads that I've glued onto the base. And the isolation pads are cut to produce the 3-second dots and the 9-second dashes, and you could put a couple of characters of Morse in one sweep of the second hand. That's the idea. And it's close to working. Then you could build the little oscillator right on the same PC board, and there you go. Maybe with a 9-volt battery. So we might get the transistor count down here to one real soon. My problem is, I through all the experimenting with it, I messed up the motor, so I have to get back to the Trastevere flea market to get another motor. All right, I finished up reading Thunderstruck by Eric Larson. Several guys had recommended this over the years, and I really enjoyed it. Interesting book, and a kind of a new view on Marconi. Learned a lot of things about Marconi that I didn't know before. You know, one of the things that I found really kind of interesting and almost and encouraging in a kind of weird way is that I didn't know this, that speaking of Nobel Prizes, Marconi was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics. And it was obviously a real big moment for him, but I didn't realize that he'd won the prize. I guess I'd never really thought of him as a physicist. And from reading the book, it's obvious that he didn't think of himself as a physicist either. Hey, listen to this, and I have marked the page here, but I'm glad I quickly found it here. It says here, to Marconi, the prize was an immense honor and utterly unexpected, because he had never considered himself a physicist. In the opening moments of his Nobel lecture in Stockholm, Marconi conceded that he was not even a scientist. "I might mention," he said, "that I never studied physics or electronics in the regular manner, although as a boy I was deeply interested in those subjects." He then frankly admitted that he did not fully understand why he was able to transmit across the Atlantic, only that he could. As he put it, "Many facts connected with the transmission of electric waves over great distances still await satisfactory explanation." Indeed. But I thought that it was kind of touching that in his acceptance of the Nobel Prize, he kind of harked back to his days as a schoolboy experimenter up in his shack up there in Bologna. And anyway, very interesting. Marconi, it's a, you know, I guess any time you take somebody's life and explain it all in all of its facets, you find, you know, everybody's got some, I guess, some warts, and Marconi certainly had a few, and his personal life wasn't, it really wasn't all that pretty, but the technical stuff and his stick-to-itiveness and inventiveness, and I guess his honesty in accepting the Nobel Prize with those words was really interesting. Also, there's descriptions in there of his early, when he was trying to get the signal across the Atlantic, he was just experimenting with antennas on both sides. And it was all real, just cut and try, almost no theory behind it. Just he would have these intuitions about what the antenna should look like. And then he would order the construction of the antennas, but gargantuan antennas, just, you know, 40 huge 200-foot towers constructed near the beach on both sides with heavy gauge wire and then huge cones of kind of inverted cones coming down, just tremendous kind of civil engineering projects he would order up. It wasn't like cutting a dipole or just throwing an end-fed wire up into the tree, and very often these things would just come crashing down around him, and you know, so, and he admitted that he didn't really know why he was moving in a certain direction. He also admitted later on that, you know, the idea that longer waves were needed to go longer distances were a big mistake. And, of course, those of us now who are operating at 200 meters and down are, you know, proof of that. But anyway, an interesting book, Thunderstruck by Eric Larson, recommended. The murder story that goes along with it is quite interesting also. You almost get two books in one. Other reading I wanted to mention, I think it's the February issue of QST. They arrive here a little bit later than you get them, than most guys get them in the States, but two interesting articles in there. One, Rick's article about amplifier design. Let me see if I have it with me here. I left it out in the living room. Oh. Anyway, a really great, interesting article about designing amplifiers with a lot of real common sense advice on how to do the testing and what's going on. Really enjoyed that. And in the old radio section, there's an article on the HBR receiver, this tube-type receiver that was all the rage, I guess, in the 50s and the 60s. Great stuff, and a lot of good radio wisdom in there. So three cheers to the QST guys and the guys of the league for putting out a very nice issue of QST. Let's see. Speaking of publications, happy day. It's always a happy day when Spratt arrives here. In the spring 2009 edition, issue number 138 came in. I think we might even have the summer edition. I think I have the summer edition in my backpack. But anyway, yeah, this is the one with the Das Derelict transmitter, more minimalist projects. That's it, yeah. More minimalist projects. There's the NAT. We talked about the NAT. First, Das Derelict, Mike Rainey's AA1TJ's, a CW transmitter made from a light bulb. That's in there. Really enjoyed that. And then, let's see what else. And then, well, there's Das Derelict, valves at low B-plus voltage. The NAT1, a one-transistor CW transceiver for HF frequencies by Chris Trask, N7ZYW of Sonoran Radio Research. A really interesting rig. We've had both of these things, both of these creations on the Solder Smoke blog. But, you know, I what really caught my eye here, let me see if I find it here. Oh, man, where is it? They have crystals on the back, and they're selling crystals on the back of the in the GQRP sales club. They're selling one crystal. Ah, there it is. crystal, HC49U wire, for DSB on 40 meters, 7.159 megahertz. Three cheers for GQRP and Spratt for boldly advertising crystals for 40-meter double sideband. I think it's great. You know, I think I might have commented that every once in a while when I announced that I was using DSB, I'd get these kind of shrieks of horror from people who thought that I'd be, you know, hogging up more than double my share of the spectrum. Well, as Doug DeMaul always pointed out, at really low QRP levels, it's not going to do a lot of harm. And I think the benefit that you get from using a homebrew rig makes it all worthwhile. So I was very pleased to see the GQRP Club is supporting double sideband on the ham bands and is selling crystals for that frequency, 7.159. Three cheers to GQRP, not only for their club sales, but for another excellent issue of Spratt, the journal of the GQRP Club that no QRP'er or home brewer should be without. All right, what else? Oh, just thought I'd tell you guys a few things that are on the blog. You could check it out, www.soldersmoke.blogspot.com. That's it. That's the blog. We have an article about Alpha Alpha 7 Yankee Quebec's use of parachutes as insulation for a QRSS transmitter. Gentlemen, I think this is a first. I think we have broken new ground in ham radio technology. Check it out. There's an article on there, including, I think, a very cool picture of the parachute used by smoke jumpers, because that's what's involved here. Michael, I mentioned Alpha Alpha 1, TJ. He's been working on 1955 technology, 1959 transistor technology, 2N35 germanium transistors. He's got a rig, a description of it, and I have some words of inspiration from Michael on the Blogspot page. So from Alpha Alpha 7YQ, we get insulation, and it's followed by an article by from Alpha Alpha 1 TJ with inspiration. Yankee YQ's articles I thought was inspirational too, but so anyway, check them out. Got an email from Thailand reporting that solder smoke in CD form is on sale on Thai beaches. Well, not exactly on the beach, but in a place called Jimbo's Bar near, I think, Paiyat, Thailand. Solder smoke has been offered for sale. I kind of had this vision of guys, you know, some guy kind of lurking in the shadows, you know, psst, want some solder smoke? Got some solder smoke. I was very pleased to hear about that. So check it out. I think you'll enjoy the email message from Thailand reporting on this. Farhan posted to the EMRFD group a very interesting NASA article about the deep solar minimum. We guys, we're at deep solar minimum right now, really deep, and I think we should take pride in this. We are QRPing, home brewing, and QRSSing, and MEPTing, and whispering at one of the deepest solar minimums ever recorded. And the fact that we can communicate now should be a source of pride to all of us. Of course, it'd be nice to have a few more sunspots, but we're still going. We can handle it. We can handle the solar minimum. Check it out. It's an interesting graphic there. All right. Now, this week's EchoLink interview feature is we're really pleased to have an EchoLink chat this week with Michael, WA6ARA. Mike's been on the show before, well known to the QRP community. You know, sometimes I'm looking through old issues of Spratt or QRSS Quarterly, and I'll come across words of wisdom and inspiration and great technical ideas from Mike going way back. He's been in the game for a while. He's also one of these guys, and we've had several of them on recently, who has a really, really cool job, a job, the kind of job that a ham ham radio operator and home brewer dreams of. So we'll talk a little bit about that in our interview with Mike. Here we go.
WA6ARA. WA6ARA. N2CQR. I hope this sounds a little bit better, Mike, but I don't think it does. Go ahead.
N2CQR. WA6ARA. No, not really, unfortunately. But it's like I say, it's I can copy it fine. It's better than most single sideband. Go ahead.
Okay. I don't know what the problem is. Rickety old computer and sound card, but this is not the the normal solder smoke microphone. It's just a little computer mic. I'm gonna have to work this a little bit. I'd shut the thing off and turn it on, but I've got something running on Picasso that I haven't saved yet. So anyway, it's good to catch up. I was real glad to get your message. What are you What's on the bench at WA6ARA, Mike? Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Bench wise, I've started a BitX 17, and no, I haven't got it very far on it. Need to get some more work done on that. My wife actually is building a BitX 20, and she needs to get a little more work done on hers as well. The idea was we're going to be about the same location. I got a little bit more to catch up where she's at. And then the other item I have is the, oh gosh, now I'm trying to remember the name of it, the new PSK, N-U-P-S-K system, or whatever you want to call it, basically standalone PSK system. And I started working on that, and I had some surface mount soldering paste, and they say it's only good for 6 months to a year. Well, I found out that's pretty much true, and I was having a lot of trouble with it. So I ordered some more paste, and I received that, and so I need to get going on that and finish that little job up. It's not really very big, not that many joints to make, but something you just need to do it. Sit down and do it. And this thing called work seems to be getting in the way once in a while. Hi. How about yourself, Bill? What's keeping you busy? N2CQR, WA6ARA.
WA6ARA, N2CQR. Well, I've been afflicted with QRSS and MEPT mania, so I'm continuing to work on those kind of projects. And what I'm doing now is I'm taking my MEPT beacon, and one second here, let's see, I'm running this thing a little bit, there we go, no, that's not good, hold on, oh, I'm sorry for all these adjustments, this is a desperate effort to fix the audio in here. I know it's going to work. Anyway, I'm taking my QRSS MEPT beacon transmitter that's currently running FSK CW, and I'm going to try to modify it for this whisper mode, this automated whisper mode. It's really interesting, and I'm doing it in the simplest possible way. I popped in, put an SBL1 mixer that Jim AL7RV sent out to me. I put that in between the oscillator and the power amplifier in the beacon transmitter. But as I suspected, the little oscillator that I had in there just doesn't have enough power to drive to switch the diodes in the SBL1 mixer. So this morning I'm building a little one-stage Class A amplifier to boost the output from the oscillator to get it to a point where it can actually operate the diode ring mixer in the SBL1. And then the idea is that I'm going to run the audio from Whisper into a little audio port and have a double sideband MEPT transmitter and go on Whisper. And then with Whisper you send out these packets of data of tones, and then miraculously stations all around the globe pick you up and report you on this really cool looking map. And I don't know, got a lot of potential. But BitX 20, dual BitX 20s for 17 and 20. How exciting! That's really great. And new PSK. That, you know, I also mentioned that I'm working on this old computer, and I've got it running on Windows 3.1. And wow, you just gave me an idea. Maybe I could find a simple PSK program to run this thing and turn it into a PSK machine with a little QRP transceiver. Who knows? WA6ARA, N2CQR.
N2CQR, WA6ARA. Oh, by all means. Yeah, I suspect you probably could. PSK doesn't take a lot of computing power, really. Probably the bigger question is, does it have an adequate sound card? Is probably the number one thing. I've going with this one because I want to be able to use it outside in the field. And I really have yet found a computer built in the last 10 years that has a decent enough monitor to be able to use outside. And this thing has the, a two or three line display in reflective LCD, so you can look at it, you know, bright sunlight, and it looks just perfect. So that's the plan anyway. And that way I can play around when we're out camping and hiking and whatever with PSK. So be a little fun. Yeah, I went out hiking today into one of the local canyons, the wife and I, and walked 2.5 miles up and set up the KX1 and had a nice QSO with a guy in Arizona, and really nice long chat going on there. And that was a high point of the day. Just really enjoyed the hike, and then really enjoyed the CW out there in the field. But anyway, yeah. Give that a shot. I'm trying to remember. You're not running Linux, are you? I think you were. That's right. You're running Windows 3.1. I'm not sure. Maybe you can't. I'm not sure. There's a PSK program for Windows 3.1. That may be too old, unless somebody had downward put together a program. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they did. It's available just about in every format you can find them, one sort or another. So that'd be neat. I wish I had picked up some of these older computers years ago that had a nice reflective just two-tone LCD display, because they actually worked really good. Of course, again, the question would be whether you could run it on that. I'm sure you could probably put Linux on your machine and run it that way. And I don't know, have you considered that, moving your machine over to Linux and play around with that? I've been listening to Linux and the Ham Shack, and they got a lot of good ideas on there. And just, I haven't made the dive myself yet, but we'll see. Maybe someday. Into CQR, WA6ARA.
WA6ARA, N2CQR. Well, we're gradually being converted over from the from what Ron Sparks, our man in Dubai, calls the dark side. I know it's a big controversy, but we've got one machine in the shack right now running Linux, and that's because my eMachines PC died, and then the folks at eMachines consistently refused to send me a replacement Windows disk. So I just loaded Linux into it, and that works fine on that one. But when I first started this computer project, the restoration of the old Toshiba Satellite Pro 400CS, my first thought was to put Linux in there, but I found that most of the kind of flavors of Linux that I came across, surprisingly, were were really quite large and needed a lot of hard disk space. This thing only has, the one I have right now only has a 4 gig hard drive, and I have a Xandros Linux in the shack, and I looked and it requires at least 10 gigs on the hard drive. So this is I guess these programs are relatively lean and mean, but still need a bit more hardware than I had in this old Satellite Pro. This, I think, if I could get a version of Windows 95, that would open up more possibilities for me. Because this machine was originally running Windows 95, the laptop, before the hard drive started making all those horrible noises. But I only had Windows 3.1 in my digital junk box here, so that's what it's running right now. I'm surprised. I got lots of I can run lots of programs on it. It's quite useful, and so we'll figure out something to do. While you were talking, I was winding a toroid, which seems pretty appropriate, and I'm just the toroid for this little amplifier that I'm building to get the MEPC beacon going. Well, fine on your Trailside QSO. That sounds great. Haven't done any of that here. I hear all these tales of hiking along the Appalachian Trail and then N0TU's adventures with goat-powered QRP trail operations. It's all a lot of fun. Of course, Wes, W7ZOI, a pioneer in the combination of QRP and hiking. And I always like to look at the great pictures that Wes brings back. But no, we haven't done too much of that ourselves. We're going to be heading to Sicily. We're going to be in the area around the Etna volcano. I don't think we're going to the top because it's still snow-covered at this point, I think. But I think I mentioned Billy climbed to the top of Vesuvius, which is the volcano down by Naples. I haven't been actually doing much hiking myself. The BitX 17, wow. I'm glad you're going for 17. This is, of course, a sign of hope. You're hoping for sunspots, Mike. I love 17 meters, but haven't done too much with it since we went into the deep solar minimum. WA6ARA, N2CQR.
N2CQR, WA6ARA. Well, actually, I've been on 17 a lot, and been on 17 a little bit recently. I've been finding it open during the day around 10 o'clock local time until about 1 or 2 o'clock local time, something like that. And it's been opening up a lot down into South America for us and to the East Coast. I have not... I'm trying to think now. I remember it was even the CW portion was open pretty good with a lot of signals the other day. And I'm trying to remember. I think it was still, they were LUs. I worked a couple of LUs that were LWs. They were running some special event station. I forget what it was all about. Anyway, worked them down there and on CW. So it does open up a surprising amount. It's one of those things, you know, but you look at the solar information, and it looks pretty dismal. I can't forget, I remember who it was. Oh, I think it was the guy who writes the ARRL's solar predictions, and he was remarking right after January 1st, talking about that he hoped that, we must be through the minimum, and it should be starting up this year, and then he said, but he looked back and he said that for the last 3 years. So obviously, and then there's I saw recently a new report that says, one that said that we're in the lowest it has been in the last 100 years, longest minimum. And another report, though, that said, yes, but it's going to be a fantastic maximum when it does happen. So I think it's like anybody else. They, you know, whether it's the stock market or the silver market or whatever, it's nobody knows. Nobody really knows, but if you get enough people, somebody, at least one of them's got to be right. Oh, well. Yeah, on the computer. Yeah, that's interesting because I've played around with one of the distros that was set up for ham radio applications, and the whole thing fit on a one CD, and you could boot from it and run from it, and it had several programs to boot. So seems like that sounds awful big. The other purchase that I just made recently, I haven't received it yet, bought my wife a netbook. It's a small triple E PC. It's got a small screen, it's very small. And opted for no hard disk. It has no mechanical hard disk, I should say. It has all solid-state hard disk. I better hurry up here. Anyway, makes it a little bit more robust, I hope, and certainly a lot faster. So, fly time out here. Back to you, Bill. N2CQR, WA6ARA.
WA6ARA, N2CQR. Yeah, you know, you're right. There's got to be a way to do it with Linux. I got to get one of those live CDs. That would probably be the way to go. It's probably just that the Zandros version I had was, for some reason, really big. But yeah, I should be able to run it off the live CD. I've heard about them. I've never really played with one, but it would be great for the laptop. Oh yeah, and I'm way ahead of you on the notebook, the EPC. We got Billy one for his for Christmas. I think he got it. Yeah, he got it for Christmas, and he's had a lot of fun with it. We've had a little bit of trouble downloading the EPC people had some problems with some of the models that went out that made it difficult to download new programs from their server. But other than that, it's been fine, and he has a lot of fun with it. And I think that's really the wave of the future. And I was reading just this morning that they're predicting that they're going to get even cheaper here, pretty soon. So I think that's great. You know, it's wonderful to carry around something that's not worth several thousand bucks. So if anything happens to it, you just go buy a new one. And the applications for ham radio are really, really fantastic. 17, I used to, 17 was the band I was using from the Azores. We were in the Azores from 2000 to 2003. And just fantastic stuff. I used to work Australia regularly on phone, double sideband with about 5 watts out. And I'm talking long rag chews with guys in New Zealand and Australia. And it was just great. I love that band. No contests, all very friendly. Wonderful. Yeah. On the solar minimum, I put on the Solder Smoke blog a graph and an article from NASA. Farhan in India alerted us to this. He put a message up on the, I think it was the EMRFD mailing list, and it the article was kind of along those the same kind of bleak lines that you're discussing. They a real deep minimum, and not quite sure when we're going to pull out of it, and so tough times for QRPers. But like you said, I guess it's a short opening from 10 o'clock in the morning to 1 or 2 in the afternoon. But there it is, and you could take advantage of it. I occasionally tune across 17 here, and I do hear friends SM0OWX Chris up in Stockholm is on almost every day, and every time I tune across, I can hear him there. But the days of working VK and ZL on 5 watts double sideband, we're gonna have to wait a few years few years for that. But hey, like you said, maybe it'll be another solar max to remember. The IGY solar max. We joke on Solder Smoke. A number of us were born in the International Geophysical Year, and I think 1958, 1959 was a particularly good solar max. And perhaps this is why many of us of that generation are still, you know, fanatical ham radio operators, because we were born during a really maxed out solar max. WA6ARA, N2CQR.
N2CQR, WA6ARA. Yeah, that, I think that's cycle 19, I believe. Yeah, I predated it by about 2 years myself. And I don't recall, of course, I recall nothing about that. My father was a ham, and the next cycle in late 60s, I believe, just before I got my novice ticket, I remember he loved mobile operations, and we did a lot of mobile operations on 20 and 15 and 10. He loved 15 meters, and we did. And I remember I logged for him most of the time and such. And so that was a special time at that time. And he used to be, well, he was on 5 meters back before World War II. He had stories about that from time to time, too. But he never got on 6. I think it was the old TV Channel 2 issue. Yeah, you mentioned 17 meters. One thing I enjoy chatting with are the folks doing HF PAC. You probably have heard about that, where folks are out backpack mobile. And they're operating while they're walking. And they're a fun group to chat with, and I usually catch them on 17 quite a bit when the band's open on a weekend. And they're a fun group. Let's see, you mentioned about the Triple E PC. Yeah, I'm glad to hear Billy has one. Glad to hear that it's working for you. Yeah, we're getting it mainly as a an extra computer to for portable operation. We travel quite a bit, driving up and down, visiting our kids and grandkids and all that good stuff. So it'd be nice to have a small portable computer to take along with us that will run a long time on the batteries and what have you. The price has dropped quite a bit, and you know, it's one of those things where I kind of set my mental window, and when I saw it drop into it, I said, okay, time to buy. So, you know, that's how it goes. Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, also, was on 60 meters today. I don't think you have 60 there in Italy, but was on 60 this evening, too, and running 10 watts, talking to a fellow up in Idaho from Southern California. So that's not too bad of a haul for 10 watts. We've got a 5x5. So back to you, Bill. N2CQR, WA6ARA.
Ah, very good. WA6ARA. N2CQR. Wow, 60 meters. No, I listened to it. I think it was I forget where I was when it opened up. Probably London. And I listened to it, and all the articles coming out, always exciting. A new band. No, I don't think we have it here, although I'm not sure. We have some weird UHF allocations here, too. In Europe, they have a band around 70 megahertz. What would that be? About, I think it's 4 meters or something like that, yeah. And there's quite a bit of kind of experimental activity on that. I haven't gotten into it at all, but you know, preoccupied as I am here with the fascinating world of 30-meter beacons. I need to get into something else. Your discussion of 17-meter QSOs has gotten me interested in that. It's one of these things, you know how you, when you talk to a friend who's also technically interested, you come away – and you think you have all kinds of projects and things that you want to try. So now you've got me thinking about PSK with Toshiba, the Linux disk for the Toshiba also. And I don't think you'll get me into 60 meters. But hey, I wonder if you've been doing anything with the satellites, Mike. I know you used to be in the business there with the space program. I recently came across something that I don't know if you spotted it, but I put it up on the blog. A Solder Smoke listener, Akshay, out in VA7 land, sent me a site, a NASA site, where they have basically taken a huge amount of really interesting data on the lunar landings and put them in very accessible form on one website. And you can, I told the people, the blog readers, that it's the perfect thing for people who are looking to have something playing in the background when they're building something in the shack. The first thing I played was the 15 or 20 minutes of radio chatter leading up to the Apollo 11 landing, and you could just have it playing, and you know, as you're soldering, you could listen to the back and forth between the capsule communicator and the astronauts, and it was a lot of fun. And things that you picked up that like kind of little jokes that they were telling that they kind of didn't make it into the evening news or or into the newspapers. But I've been having a lot of fun with that. WA6ARA and 2CQR.
N2CQR, WA6ARA. Yeah, I saw that on the on your blog, and I checked it out and have it on my computer. I have not been listening to any of the audio, but it looks like an excellent website. I really like that. That's one thing that's been done recently, either by NASA or other organizations. They've really been either on the web or even in book form, really collected up together a lot of the data. It's really interesting. I am working on the CEV, the Orion program, on the recovery parachute systems, and it's amazing the amount of information that we don't have available left over from Apollo. And I've had an occasion where I've had to go and get in the museum late at night, and they let us crawl up on top of it and look and say, oh, okay, that's how Apollo did it. All right, that makes sense, or things like that. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah, let's see, I'm going to make that. Oh, yeah, on the other satellites. Yeah, I'm still fussing with them. Been on VO-52 quite a bit, and a little bit on AO-7. AO-7 still perks along. AO-7 is kind of nice because I can usually find a CW QSO or two. It's run on no power, or no batteries, I should say. So you have to be real careful, and so a lot of folks, if you're on a single sideband, you get a lot of distortion. So I tend to operate on CW on it, and it works out pretty good. VO-52 is just an excellent bird, absolutely excellent. And unfortunately, the other one, DO-64, yeah, had a lot of promise, and it made a few QSOs through it, but unfortunately, my understanding is the transponder has died on it. So that was too bad. We had hoped that was going to go for a long time. And we're looking forward for the, there's going to be a Chinese handset going up in a few months. And maybe this time next year we'll also have the Kiwi set from New Zealand. So that ought to be a lot of fun when that one goes up as well. So, and then India is talking about a new handset. So maybe sometime in the next year or two, we'll see something else from them. So, the VO-52 is an absolutely excellent bird. On the distro for Linux, the one I tried was Harv's Ham Shack, as I recall. I think that's an older distro now, but still works. I have a copy of it someplace, and if you need to get a copy and you can't get one, let me know, and I can burn you an image and shoot it over to you. Yeah, the 4 meter band, 70 megahertz. That's where most of the RC radio, RC airplanes and such are on. So maybe now, as everybody on RC is slowly moving towards 2.4 gig, maybe that will open up for a ham band in the United States. We'll see. N2CQR, WA6ARA.
WA6ARA, N2CQR. Well, Mike, it sounds like you got another one of those dream jobs working on the parachutes for Orion, and getting to crawl around in the old Apollo spacecraft. Wow. I wonder, was that at Air and Space in Washington, or if you could tell us more about that, that'd be interesting. Wow. I got to meet, when I was in London, I got to meet one of the major proponents for, there we go, there's Maria Patricia.
Good morning. Say good morning, Maria.
Good morning.
She is. We just had her birthday party yesterday, big birthday party. Had a great time. It went very well. Anyway, I got to meet Mike Griffin, the former NASA administrator, when he came through London a few times. And it was real interesting to talk to him, and the level of enthusiasm was real high. Man, he's a smart guy, I tell you. We were very impressed with Mike. He not only on the scientific stuff, but he put a few of the diplomats to the test too, because he actually is smart in just about all different areas, and he's multilingual, and he was talking to people in Spanish and French, and yeah, it was one of those scary smart rocket scientists, Mike. Well, I'm going to try that distro for the for Linux. I wonder if any of these live CDs could be downloaded. I imagine it'd be a fairly big download, but if it's all on one CD, it can't be that big. So maybe I could just find one, download it, and then see if I could run it on the Toshiba. One of the reasons I did revive the Toshiba was that I wanted to make use of the sound system on it, because I always thought it had a pretty good sound system, and I managed to get that going too. Kevin ZL3KE in New Zealand helped me through the whole process. So who knows? This Toshiba could be performing all kinds of great technical services. PSK31. I want to get it going on as a QRSS generator, maybe even a whisper generator on the satellites. Wow, that's exciting! I didn't realize all these new birds were going up. Hold on, where are you going? She'll be right back, Maria Patricia. Wow, that is really interesting. I'll have to get back into that again. I guess the last satellite that I really worked with was PCSat from the midshipman at the Naval Academy, and I was using that out in the Azores, and I had it set up where I had a little beacon transmitting, and would combine it with APRS, so I'd leave the beacon on, and the beacon would set the fire every minute or so, and while I was at work, occasionally I would check the APRS kind of global, the global readout on where all the APRS stations were. And whenever I knew when PCSat had passed over the North Atlantic, because all of a sudden there'd be a little spot with I had a little symbol with an island and a palm tree out there in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And that was me. It was very satisfying. WA6ARA, N2CQR.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I suspect you didn't have to compete too much with very many other signals at your location, but that's great. Yeah, Mike Griffin, I don't know if you knew that. He is a ham radio operator, too. I don't recall his call. I think it's a 5 call. I believe he's an extra. Never met the guy. I met his predecessor and was not very impressed. What I read about Mike Griffin was very impressive. He is a very, very sharp guy. And it's I think it's too bad that he's not still in the chair there. And they're kind of running. They have a temporary guy, so it's there's not been an appointment yet. So that's unfortunate. And I'm not sure where everything's going to go right now. Yeah, it's actually what I'm working for is on the safety end of NASA's. And doing a bunch of reviews on the whole program for him, on the parachute system, and then the person working next to me is also consulting for the program as well. So, got a little bit of activity there. Happy birthday to Maria Patricia there. That's great. Not how old she is, but that's great. And the Apollo capsule was the one that's at Houston, at Space Center Houston. They have a big museum type thing going on there, and they have a Apollo capsule. Trying to think which one it was. I think it's Apollo 17. I want to say. They also have the Skylab trainer there, and a limb, and a few other odds and ends. So that's kind of neat stuff. But anyway, yeah, they let us in after hours, and so we could crawl up and look at how they did some things. And I had worked with one of the gentlemen years ago. He's passed away, unfortunately. He was one of the German scientists that came over after World War II, and he had done a lot of the work on the Apollo system, and a very, very sharp guy. I enjoyed his stories, and I wish I'd listened to him a whole lot more. Let's put it that way, as far as Apollo work. Hey, I'm going to have to say 73. It's getting kind of late here. Got to turn in. Been a good chat, and hope we can do it again sometime. And like I say, I really enjoyed 104. I really enjoyed the talk on the clubs and the different... how some of the clubs are doing things a little bit different, a lot more hands-on, versus the meetings where everybody comes in, sits down, and waits for somebody to come in and give them a lecture. I like that. I'm going to say 73, Bill. You have a good one, and look forward to 105. So see you all next time. N2 CQR WA6ARA. Good night.
Okay, Mike. Real good. Well, great. It's been great talking to you. Yeah, we got to continue. And I'm glad you like 104. It was good hearing about the clubs. Yeah, no Robert's Rules of Order, please. All right. Thanks very much.
All right. Excellent. Thanks very much, Mike. Thanks for that. Hope to talk to you again real soon, gentlemen. It's now time for.
Sorry, smoke mail bag.
I love them.
Indeed. Yeah, Sutter Smoke Mailbag. Thanks to everyone who wrote in about the earthquake. Got lots of expressions of concern and support, and really appreciate it. And like I said, we're so far from it, there's no real damage here. But thanks for all the expressions of concern. Gil, NN4CW, sent us in a really an email, not really ham radio related, but Italy related. Really cracked us up about these ads that you sometimes see in the back of airplane magazines for the Rosetta Stone language learning programs. And what they have is, they said, you know, he is a Kansas farm boy, and she is an Italian supermodel. And he's only going to have one chance to get her attention. So our hero turns to Rosetta Stone in an effort to learn enough Italian to pick up the Italian supermodel. Man, that would have to be like a really, really, really good language program, believe me. Anyway, Gil found an interesting article, kind of a kind of a snotty New Yorker article in a kind of snotty New Yorker magazine way, but it was about what the actual language lessons might entail and what vocabulary our hero from Kansas might need. I just got a kick out of that. Shared it with people in the office, and we found it all quite funny. Snotty, but funny. But thanks for that, Gil. Jeff, KO7M, had commented on problems with the IRF 510 and LTSPICE simulations. And I had made some comments about IRF 510s and what they could and couldn't do. Wes heard them. Wes, W7ZOI, heard them and pointed out that that we were probably doing something wrong with the simulation and that I was being too harsh on the IRF 510. Wes provided some really, really helpful and useful technical advice. I've passed it on to Jeff, and we're back on the right trail. Also, Wes said that I had kind of mischaracterized his thinking about the simulations, and that he's in no way opposed to simulation, and simulation is a way of life for most designers these days. It's just that you have to recognize the limitations of the simulation. So thanks for that, Wes, and thanks to you, Jeff. Speaking of simulations, got a really cool email from Jupe, P-E-1-C-Q-P. And Jupe sends to me, he had heard an earlier edition of Solder Smoking, which I was struggling to understand, doubly balanced modulators, DBMs, such as the SBL-1. And he sends in some words of explanation and some LTSPICE models that will help me understand that particular circuit. Very important. Thanks for that, Jupe. Pierre, VE2XPL, is in Montreal. And he was recruited into the Solder Smoke fold by Randy, K7AGE. Pierre sends along a really beautiful QSL card with a picture of Montreal's skyline. Very nice, beautiful place. Brian, KG4ENB, is having a lot of fun with the SW40. Fine business on that. Chris M0JRQ wrote up a review of Solder Smoke for a UK ham radio magazine. Very nice review. Thanks for that, Chris. Antonio in Porto, Portugal, is a listener and says that he got the knack from his dad and suffered some pretty bad Solder Smoke finger burns or soldering iron finger burns as a kid. Antonio, we've all got those marks on our fingers. Welcome to the club. Neil, G7AQK, points out that the UK store Lidl, L-I-D-L, or Lidl, has a new 8-band portable shortwave receiver on sale, apparently very cheap. And he points out that this could be a real great opportunity for the folks in GQRP who worked on the Pound Shop radio and those kind of things. So we look forward to hearing about that. Happy to report, guys, Jerry, NR5A, our man in South Dakota, has been having big success, and I mean big success, in the QRSS, MEPT, and Whisper world. Jerry is QRSS, and he's MEPT, and he's whispering, and he's being heard around the globe, including in VK6 land. VK6DI has picked him up, and Jerry is one happy camper out there on the snow-swept plains of South Dakota. And he struggled with this thing. I got many emails from him saying, the heck with it, I've had it, enough of this. But he kept at it. He persisted, and he's had success. So I was really glad to hear about that. Congratulations, Jerry. Gene, W3PM, who I mentioned earlier, sent in a nice email and agrees that double sideband whisper should work. Ken, N0HRL, has a book recommendation for a book called 1 Second After by William Forsten, Forsten. It's about life in America after an electromagnetic pulse attack. All of our electronics would be wiped out except for the tube stuff. Gentlemen, my 2B stands ready to serve. My Drake 2B, ready to go. Thanks for that, Ken. Bob, KD4EBM, recommends Puppy Linux for my Toshiba laptop. we'll give that a try. And he recommends a book, The Victorian Internet. He also writes in about another homebrew computer CPU site. In the last issue of Solder Smoke, I think we talked about a guy who had homebrewed his own computer CPU. Now, there's another one out there, and this guy's got a really amazing site. And as Bob points out, go for the homebrew CPU, but stay for the homebrew Marconi Coherer and other projects. I don't have this one up on the blog yet. I'll try to do it, but in case I forget, the website is just homebrewcpu, that's all one word, .com. So www.homebrewcpu.com. Great stuff there. You'll really enjoy it. And finally, Stephen, Hotel Sierra Zero, Zulu Hotel Bravo. He's the guy who reported that Solder Smoke is being sold at Jimbo's Bar in Payette, Thailand. Thanks very much for that, Stephen. Good luck with all your projects. Guys, that brings us to the end of Solder Smoke 105. Thanks very much for listening. For everyone, happy Easter, and hope to talk to you again in another couple of weeks. 7-3 from Rome.